Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere MQ version 7.1, multi-version, environment considerations and management. Today's presenters are Gary Robbins, Justin Fries, and Rich Montjoy. Gary has worked with IBM for over 30 years. For the last 22 years, he has worked customer support, including support of the KIX and TX series products. In 2002, he joined the WebSphere MQ support team. Currently, Barry is responsible for resolving customer problems as they relate to WebSphere MQ for distributed platforms. Justin has been working with WebSphere MQ for over 14 years and with the service integration bus since its first release. Justin focuses on resolving WebSphere MQ issues on Unix and Linux systems and works to improve the serviceability of WebSphere MQ on all platforms. Rich has worked in IBM customer support for 17 years. He joined the WebSphere MQ support team in 1998 and was a founding member of the Service Integration Bus support team, which is currently working on WebSphere MQ distributed systems problems. At this point in time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Justin.
Thank you, Joseph, and thank you, everyone, for joining us for part two of this presentation. Now, let's go on to the next slide, please. So today, we're going to start with a brief review of some things we discussed in part one. And after that, we're going to move on and talk about managing your WebSphere MQ environment, which is much more important these days if you're going to be using multi-version. We'll talk about application development, including building and running your applications and also your exits. We'll talk about migrating installations, applying maintenance, upgrading your WebSphere MQ level, rolling back to previous levels of code. And we'll also talk about some implications of multi-version for things like failover, clustering, and we'll discuss how it affects diagnostic tools such as error logs, FFSTs, and traces. And then at the end, we'll have a summary before the Q&A section. Let's go to slide three. So in part one, we described the new multi-version capability of WebSphere MQ 7.1. It allows multiple installations on AIX, HPUX, Linux, Solaris, and Windows, but not on IBM i or ZOS. Every installation has a unique name and path, and those are stored in a file on Unix, which is given there, or in Windows and the registry. And in addition to having multiple versions of 7.1, you may have one pre-existing version of 7.0.1.6 or later. To manage multiple installations, MQ provides several new commands, and it amends some of the existing commands. And it's important to note that all the installations of WebSphere MQ share the same data directory, so all the queue managers live in the same location. But each queue manager is associated with only one installation. So it's not a case where each installation has its own set of queue managers. They're all in one place. They all share the same namespace. Let's go on to slide four. So first, we're going to talk about some practical environmental considerations. How do you manage your environment in order to work with WebSphere MQ multi-version? Let's go to slide five. So first, a bit of history, some quite old history. We'll go back to the MQ series days. In the days when the product was called MQ series, on Windows, as today, we had no fixed install location. When you installed MQ, it updated some global environment variables like lib and path to point to MQ and make things work. But on Unix and Linux systems, MQ installed into a fixed location, and in addition to that, it created a number of symbolic links under the user file system. So commands were linked under user bin, and the 32-bit libraries, which were all we had at the time, were linked under user lib, and even header files were linked under user include. So So the effect of this is by placing these links in a global location, things just worked. If you wanted to run strmqm, the command would be found and it would run with no other consideration. And some other choices were sort of made for you that you may not have been aware of. For example, something as simple as compiling amqsput.0.c, the sample program, would include header files from that MQ installation. It would use 32-bit libraries from MQ. It's not apparent from the command line, but there were some choices being made for you by the symbolic links. So let's go on to slide 6. Advancing a few years to 2005, when WebSphere MQ version 6 added support for 64-bit applications. Now, we had a bit of a problem with this because user lib, all of those symbolic links, point to the 32-bit libraries. And so what do you do now for a 64-bit application? If it runs into those links, it's going to fail to start because those aren't the right bit level of library. So in the Information Center, we documented, this is all the way back in 2005, that when you built a 64-bit application, you had to explicitly include the path to the 64-bit library directory. And I have an example, a GCC command. The part that's outlined in red shows us building in what's called a runtime library path, often just called an RPath. In addition to doing this for 64-bit applications, we also recommended that every 32-bit application you built should also have an RPath built in, pointing to the 32-bit library. And an example of that's also given. And with 64-bit application libraries, we actually ran into problems where the mere existence of links to the 32-bit libraries in user lib could cause trouble, especially on AIX. Here's an example of the error you might see. Cannot load program because of the following errors. Module cannot be loaded. The module has an invalid magic number, which is Unix's quirky way of saying it was a 32-bit library and I wanted the 64-bit one. So back in the days of MQ version 6 and also of 7.0, we had programs delete MQLink and create MQLink to get rid of those links in user lib. Let's go on to slide 7. So WebSphere MQ version 7.1 is continuing the changes that began all the way back in version 6.0. We have, by default, made it that WebSphere MQ 7.1 will not have links under slash user. No links are ever put there during the installation process. As we discussed last week, if you choose to make an MQ 7.1 installation the primary installation on the machine, then some of those links will be restored to restore behavior of older levels of the product. So that would be the commands under user bin and the 32-bit libraries under user lib, but not the header files under any circumstances. There is a file shipped with MQ called instinfo.tsk, which enumerates what happens in order to make an installation primary. On Unix, it's just about creating a bunch of symbolic links. Windows is a little bit more interesting. So with MQ 7.1 not having these links, some things that used to just work now require you to make an explicit choice. So when you're including headers or copybooks or when you're linking an application with the MQ libraries, you now need to include explicit paths. Again, this really was recommended since 2005, but it's really quite important now. And in addition, if you're going to use MQ from the command line, you need to make sure your path includes the proper MQ installation that you want to work with in order to run its commands. So our recommendation is that you try to avoid relying on any of the MQ links under user directory, i.e. on Unix, don't use a primary installation unless you have to. Let's go to slide 8. So it would be irksome to work with MQ if you had to type the full path out to every MQ command all the time. So MQ 7.1 ships a command called setmqenv, which makes it easy to set your environment to work with a particular installation. On Windows, you can just run setmqenv, but on Unix and Linux, you have to source it using the dot syntax. Now, the dot is very small on this slide, but the way that reads is dot space slash user slash IBM, the path all the way out to setmqenv. And what the dot syntax means is that setmqenv will modify your current shell. If you fail to use the dot, then setmqenv won't have any effect. And on Windows, as I say, you can run it like any other command. Most of the time, you're going to need to include it in double quotes, given that the path name is probably going to have spaces in it. And there's an example of that. Let's go to slide 9. So here's an example of using SetMQ ENV. In this case, if I run the dispmq ver command, as we discussed last week, it now shows you some new fields. And I should make a point that in this and similar slides later on, I have edited the output of some of these commands to show you what's interesting. So dispmq ver will actually show you a bit more than that. But starting off at the top of this wheel, dispmq ver shows that we're already associated with an installation, the installation called Bronx, and it gives the path to it, 7100. And for this foil and another one, I'm just going to use as an example some of the boroughs of New York and some neighborhoods to kind of give a geographic analogy. So if I'm in the Bronx installation and I run endmqm minus I Pelham, it will end in the normal way, and that happens to be because Pelham's a neighborhood in the Bronx, Pelham Bay. But if I run strmqm Canarsie, Canarsie is in Brooklyn. And sure enough, the strmqm command will fail. It will say, QManager Canarsie is associated with a different installation, Brooklyn. So if I want to work with the Canarsie QManager, I have to source on Unix and Linux the setmqenv command using the dot syntax and say, now I want to work with the Brooklyn installation. So after sourcing it, that's the line in red, the fourth command. If I run dispmq ver, it now shows that I'm, in fact, with the Brooklyn installation. And I can run strmqm Canarsie, and it will start up just fine. Let's go to slide 10. Now, last week when we talked about setmqenv, we mentioned that it actually partnered with a program called createmqenv that basically tells it what environment changes to make. And if you look in the Information Center, it says, if you want to, you can just take the createmqenv output itself and incorporate it into a script, basically write an alternative to setmqenv with maybe some different behavior. So I actually did that, mostly for us to use here in Level 2, and I thought I'd publish it to the web and make it available to anybody else to use if you wish. So that alternative is called WMQ71 Profile, and it's actually still being published to the IBM support site. Very much hope by the end of the day it will be there. But certainly, if you return in a day or so and search for WMQ71 profile, you should find it. So the major features of this alternative is that it's, first of all, designed to be sourced by user login profiles. And it defines a shell function called setmqenv, which users can run, but it doesn't actually run that function itself. It just defines it. So just sourcing this WMQ71 profile won't actually change or set up any MQ installations. However, if you have a file in your personal directory called .wmqprofile, it will run any commands in that. We'll have an example of that. So the WMQ71 profile can automatically switch MQ commands to the appropriate installation, so no more AMQ5691 errors. And it also has the ability to generate some debug output if you set an environment variable. So let's go to slide 11. To use this script, you just use the same dot syntax, and you point it to the WMQ71 profile, which could be in your home directory, or maybe your systems administrator puts it in a fairly global place, like etc/opt/mqm. And after you've done that, you can run the setmqenv command, but you don't have to use a dot anymore, and you don't have to give a path to it either, which is convenient. Otherwise, the syntax is almost the same as the WebSphereMQ command documented in the Information Center. For example, setmqenv minus n installation 1, or setmqenv minus r to reset the entire MQ environment to nothing. But there is one addition. There's a minus z flag, which when you use it, enables command switching. And that's the thing that avoids the AMQ5691 error. So setmqenv minus z minus n staging would enable command switching. And also set the current environment to point to the staging installation. So let's go to slide 12 to see an example of this. So here we go. We run setmqenv minus a z for command switching, n to give the installation name of Manhattan. And dispmqver shows, sure enough, our current installation is Manhattan. So I run strmqm Pelham, which, if you recall, is up in the Bronx installation. But it doesn't matter. It just starts. And the fourth command is a little interesting. It uses the new dumpmqcfg command, which sort of replaces the save QManager support pack. So this runs dumpmqconfig against the Canarsie QManager, which is in the Brooklyn installation and generates running QSC output, which goes straight into the Pelham queue manager. So even though those two queue managers are from different installations, that one single command will work just fine. And it's a good way to copy your configuration from one queue manager to another. I can stop the canarsie queue manager, as shown in the next command. But if I run dispmq ver at the end, you'll still see my current installation is Manhattan. So all of my environment variables point to the Manhattan installation. It's just that commands will get switched to whatever they need to be. Let's go to slide 13. So having talked about how to manage your environment, either with setmqenv or with an alternative if you wish, let's now talk about how to build and run applications and exits on slide 14. So how things work is that when developers are building WebSphereMQ applications, there's a step at which they have to link those programs with the WebSphereMQ libraries. And then when the application actually runs, in order to run at all, the operating system has to be able to find those same libraries. So on Windows, this works, again, using libraries like lib and path, which is pretty much how it's always worked for MQ. And as for .NET, the WebSphereMQ .NET assemblies are placed in the global assembly cache, so they're also easy to find. On Unix and Linux, the way libraries can be found, first of all, there are some environment variables that can force the system to look in a particular path for libraries. Usually, there are some cases where these environment variables won't work, but they can usually work. Otherwise, the system will look for MQ libraries, firstly using the built-in runtime path, or rpath. That's the thing MQ's been recommending for 7 years now. Failing that, the system will look in some directories like userlib, and that's historically been enough to make 32-bit MQ apps work, but not the 64-bit ones. So let's go to slide 15. So we have a little bit of trouble brewing now. If you have an MQ7016 or better installation, and you install MQ7.1 to coexist with it, that means MQ7.1 is going to be in a non-default path. And so by default, any applications that you have are going to continue using the libraries they always have, the MQ7.0 libraries. And that'll work just fine for any queue managers which are associated with the 7.0 installation. However, if your application tries to connect to a queue manager, which is part of the 7.1 installation, it's going to get reason code 2059 from MQCon or MQConX, meaning MQRC, queue manager not available. Here's another issue. If you've installed MQ7.1 to a non-default location and you've removed MQ7.0 entirely, then your applications may fail to run at all. As an example, you may get an error like this, MQ app, error loading shared libraries, libmqm.so, cannot open, no such file or directory. So that means the system is just completely failing to find any MQ libraries. So let's go to slide 16, which describes how we can avert trouble. The goal here is really to make sure that your programs can find the WebSphereMQ 7.1 libraries, if at all possible. Because the 7.1 libraries, as we'll discuss in a moment, have the ability to connect to all queue managers in all installations on the machine, whereas 7.0 libraries can only connect to 7.0 queue managers. So, option number one, you can rebuild your application and include an MQ 7.1 path in the rpath, or runtime library path of the application. That would be ideal. Option two, you can run the setmqenv program to point to an MQ 7.1 installation. And on Linux and Unix, you would probably need to use either the minus K or minus L flags. Those are the flags that will modify the LD underscore library path or on AIX, the lib path environment variable to make sure that those libraries get picked up. Another alternative, if you've removed MQ 7.0, you can run setmqenv with a minus I to make one of your MQ 7.1 installations the primary installation. That's going to put some of those links back in user lib that maybe your applications have been relying on, and that might be enough to get them to work again. Or you can do a similar thing by installing MQ 7.1 in the default location on Unix and Linux, i.e. OptMQM or UserMQM. If you can't do that, you can, on Linux and Unix, and even on Windows, you can create links symbolic link that will satisfy whatever runtime path your application is expecting. And there are also some tools out there, for example, one on Linux called CHRPath, which you may be able to use to modify an existing application without rebuilding or relinking it. I can't entirely guarantee that they would work. I would certainly suggest that if you try any programs like CHRPath, keep a copy of your original application, because I'm not sure it's guaranteed to be successful, but it's a potential option. So let's go to slide 17. The next two slides are for reference. I'm not going to say a great deal about them, but if you have an application that you're really having trouble getting it to run and find the MQ libraries, you will want to look at that application to see where does it expect the libraries to come from. So on AIX, you can figure that out using this command, the dump command. Dump minus capital H, minus XNE, which will allow it to run against 32 and 64-bit apps, and then you point it to your application. The bit that's outlined in red, in the zeroth line there, is the runtime library path. For HP Unix, there's a command called CHATR, which you can run against your application. It'll print a lot more information than is listed here, but it will include the library path. And I should also mention that you can use the CHATR command to enable or disable the use of variables like LD_library_path. So do be aware that those variables might not work, but you can change that. On the FOIL 18. On Linux, similar command called readelf, with minus D and then the application. And on Solaris, the command is elfdump with a minus D. I've given a path name because it's not in the usual path that you might be used to. You have to go under user CCS bin, or at least I did on my systems. And on Windows, there are a number of tools out there, graphical tools usually, for looking at applications and figuring out what their dependencies are. One of them that I've used is called the Dependency Walker, or depends.exe, but there are certainly others. So let's go to slide 19. So MQ7.1 has some fairly big changes to the way the libraries are composed. Now, it shouldn't matter too much to your applications, but I figure you may be interested in see how things have changed. Firstly, most of the contents of the MQ application libraries have moved to a single library called libmqe, or on Windows, mqe.dll. And all of the other libraries are just thin veneers around libmqe. So I've actually listed from an AIX machine some of the libraries that you may have used for your application, the client library, the Java bindings, the server library, COBOL, XA, and others. And you can see that they're quite small. And then libmqe is big. In fact, libmqe, I think I worked it out that it's 343 times larger than libmqm is. So that's where the code is these days. An interesting consequence, because libmqe includes most everything, it actually includes both the client and the server code. And this actually makes it possible to build an application, a server application linked with libmqm, that can also connect as a client. It just has to give the option mqcno_client_binding. Now, that's not the focus of this presentation, but it's just an interesting side effect. Let's go to slide number 20. So, installation switching is a capability of the new libmqe library. Libmqe is basically self-contained. So what that means is that if you have an application that you run and it's linked with libmqe in installation 1, libmqe in installation 1 can, if necessary, load libmqe from any other installation on the machine. And the way the libmqe libraries work, they also share a module called libmqzsd, or on Windows, mqzsd.dll, which you will find actually under the data path. So, for example, under var mqm shared, and there will be some subdirectories. I mention that because you may see that library out there and think, what on earth is that doing in the data path? It's really supposed to be there. This is so that installations can talk to each other a little bit. So any application using, for example, libmqm and other libraries should get switched over to the right installation's libmqe. Or if you have an existing 7.0 installation, they'll get switched over to that. Now, there are very few exceptions, mostly relating to Kix applications where switching doesn't occur. But by and large, the MQ libraries at 7.1 do switching. So once you use those MQ7.1 libraries, you can connect to anything on the machine, no matter what installation it is. There are some restrictions if you have a FastPath application, that is, one using MQCNO FastPath binding. And those restrictions are documented in the Information Center. If you're running FastPath apps, you really need to read the whole thing in the Information Center. The main restriction is that if you do a FastPath connection, it should be the first connection done by the application. But there are some other caveats. On to FOIL 21. So, exits. Exits are binaries which MQ can load and invoke at certain times while it's running in order to modify its behavior, for example, the behavior of channels, or to change API calls, and there are a number of other cases as well. So some exits are allowed to issue MQI calls, MQ open, MQ put, MQ get, that kind of thing. And those exits, when you built them, they had to be linked with the MQ libraries. So now the question, I guess, is if you have exits like that, do they have to be relinked, maybe even relinked for every installation? Well, the answer is you can do that if you want, yes. And if you have an exit that is linked for installation 1, you would install it to the exits/installation1 subdirectory or exit64/installation1. And similarly for installation 2 or test installation or whatever you name your installations. So MQ7.1 will always look in the installation specific directory to see if there's a file there, and it will load it first. But let's go to slide 22. It is now possible to build exits, and it's recommended that you try to modify your exits to take advantage of this, to build exits that can work with any installation. And the way this now occurs is that MQ7.1 provides a new header file called cmqec.h, and that header defines a new structure called mqiep. And the MQIEP structure has nothing but a bunch of pointers to the MQI functions. And that structure gets passed in by reference to any exit that can make MQI calls. So rather than just calling MQGET in your exit application, you just have to modify to use the pointer from MQIEP. So MQIEP arrow MQGET_call. It'll drive the same exact code. But the nice thing is that when you build your exit, you don't have to link with the MQ libraries like libmqm. You don't have to worry about what library path you specify to pick up libmqm because it'll be taken care of for you at runtime. So, for your exits, we strongly recommend that you modify them to use the new MQIEP structure. And when you do build them that way, you can put them in the top level exits or exits64 directory and they will work across all installations. So let's now go on to FOIL number 23. And at this point, I'm going to turn over to my colleague, Rich Montjoy.
Thanks, Justin. Next slide, please, Joseph, as we're going to move on to talking about migration. So I thought I'd start out by going over some version details, since this will be relevant to the migration discussion. With MQ, we have the notion of a four-digit numbering scheme indicating the version, release, modification, and fixed pack level. MQ version and releases are known by the first two digits of the VRMF code. A version of MQ always comes with a release level, and the first release of a new version is typically represented by a zero, for example, 7.0. A new version will have a five-year support date, and a new release will start the five-year cycle all over again for that release. The third digit is the modification level. Since we don't want customers to wait 2 or 3 years for a version or release change for new queue manager functions, if there's some key requirement out there pending, new queue manager functionality may be introduced in a mod level change. For example, multi-instance queue managers in 7.0.1. Just a note, I believe if you were to download the latest releases off the Passport Advantage website, they contain the latest mod level. Any change here does not change the release and the end of service date. Typically in the past, you probably didn't pay much attention to the modification level, and we'll see why you might want to in a couple slides, as new functions introduced at a mod level change has to be expressly enabled to take effect. The fourth digit is the fix level. If you install a fix pack, you'll see this value get incrementally updated as you apply maintenance and has no effect on the command level of the queue manager. We might do new functions with fix packs, but will not be a fundamental change and will not change the command level for the queue manager. So if we, say, decided to ship Justin's profile script that he talked about, it could be done in a fix pack since no queue manager functionality has changed. Slide 25, please. WebSphere MQ command levels. What do I mean by command levels? Well, queue managers always had a command level associated with them that you probably never paid much attention to. The command level relates to the version, release, modification level and indicates what functions it supports. One way to check the command level is with Run MQSC's display queue manager as shown, and we'll see another way later. If you updated the version or release of MQ, when you next started the queue manager, a new command level would be introduced. This is what we refer to as migration. Once you advance the command level for a queue manager, you can't go back without a backup of the queue manager. I'll have some examples of switching command levels at the end of this section. And we'll now look at another way the command level can change in 7.1 besides a change in version and release. Slide 26, please. Enabling new function. So when you hear migration, what are we really talking about is updating the queue manager command level. STRMQM always did this for you when you updated the version or release and still does. Previously, it also did this for you automatically for a modification level change as well, but not so anymore. At 7.1, if new queue manager functionality is shipped in a modification level change, that's the third digit in the BRMF, it has to be expressly enabled. We didn't want to introduce new queue manager functionality that changed some behavior the customers relied on. So this way, unless you expressly ask for it, no new queue manager functions are enabled by default, and this protects you from accidental use. You can enable this new function with a new flag, that's the dash E CMD level, on STRMQM. So, for example, if you do ship some new core queue manager functionality that you want to enable, the information center would be updated with details on this new function and what specific command level is needed to enable it, for example, 713. That's just the number I'm picking. It doesn't indicate anything that's coming down the road or anything. Also, since queue managers may be running at a lower command level that the current code installed supports, DSP MQBur will now show the current CMD level and the max CMD level. This means the CMD level is no longer an accurate reflection of the MQ installed version or release. Not that anybody ever really used it for that, but just worth noting. So to summarize, the new core queue manager functionality may come in a modification release. If it does, you have to enable it. If you enable it, you can't put it back unless you restore the queue manager from backup. Slide 27, please. So now we're going to go into some migration scenarios here, and the first one is the single-stage upgrade. Let's take a look at this option that's available for 7.1. In earlier versions of releases, the upgrade story was very linear. It was simple and had few configuration changes. You stopped the queue manager and applications, you uninstalled MQ, typically, installed a new version release in the same default directory path, and you restarted the queue manager, and that restart is what did the migration for you. This is referred to as the single stage or the big bang migration. You can still do this, and we expect many customers will still opt for this, but keep in mind, queue manager migration for 7.1 is only supported at V6 and later. So if you have an old V3 queue manager hanging around and you need to upgrade this to something between V6 and 7.0.1.5, start it, then do the upgrade to 7.1 to migrate those over. So you can't go directly from 5.3 to 7.1. You have to do that intermediate hop there. And there's a nice chart in the Info Center which talks about this. And with this single-stage option, the queue managers are offline during the installation process, which equates to downtime, and we can alleviate some of that with the different upgrade options for 7.1, which we'll see next. Slide 28, please. So another migration option is the side-by-side migration. As we've probably beaten to death, multi-version prereqs 7016 or later. If you had a 7016 installation, you could keep those queue managers running happily along while you did the 7.1 installations into a new directory path and verified. Verification would typically involve something like creating 7.1 test queue managers, channels, and running samples or test programs just to confirm that the installation is sound. Once this is complete, you stop the 7016 queue managers and apps and uninstall 7016. At this point, since the 7016 is now off, you can run setmqint to make the 7.1 installation primary if you chose. This would give you the assumed behavior that Justin talked about with the symlinks where things worked like before, or you could rely on setmqenv to set the environment for the installation. Once the queue managers are restarted, the migration is done. Since we're changing version and release here in this example, and not just making a modification level change, you don't need to use the -EECMD level with the strmqm to enable the new function. Remember, we may automatically enable a new queue manager function by default with a version or release change, but we won't enable new function automatically for just a mod level change. Queue managers left behind by an uninstall will have no associated installation. So unassociated queue managers are automatically migrated when they're next started. So say you had a V7 queue manager on a box and removed V7 on a box and removed it prior to installing 7.1 in a single stage scenario. The queue manager at the 7.1 command level. You could run setmqenv to associate them to a 7.1 install, but MQ is smart enough to direct unassociated queue managers, meaning queue managers not tied to an installation, to the installation where strmqm was issued. Also, you can see the 7016 queue managers can remain running during the 7.1 install and verification. So we've reduced the expected downtime, and you can make the 7.1 primary since 7.01 is uninstalled. And again, the Info Center has a pretty good discussion on this if you want to refer to that as well. Slide 29, please. Multi-stage upgrade. Here we have the most flexible option, multi-stage. You keep the 7016 installed just like the side-by-side upgrade we just looked at and install 7.1 in a different directory and do the same sort of verification. However, the difference here is that you migrate the 7016 queue managers over one at a time without uninstalling 7016 prior to migration. This way you can take your time and migrate the queue managers at a more leisurely pace. The 7016 queue managers can keep running in the 7016 primary installation, while any new 7.1 queue managers and queue managers migrated from 7016 run along in the 7.1 installation. The 7016 queue managers can be migrated to different 7.1 installations, and worth noting that even though this is the most flexible option, it does have a limitation that the 7.1 installations can't be primary since we still have a 7016 installed. And you'll remember that the 7016 installation will always be the primary installation, and you can only have one primary. Slide 30, please. So applying and removing maintenance. Similar strategy applies to applying MQ fix packs that we just went over with the migration. We have a link at the end of the presentation that takes you to the section in the Info Center regarding staging maintenance. But you can essentially have, for example, two 7.1 installations, or more even, with your queue managers associated with installation 1. When 7.1.0.1 comes out, you apply the fix packs to installation 2, and you set MQM to associate the queue managers from installation 1 to installation 2. So now they are at the new 7.0.1 level. When 7.1.0.2, say, comes out, you apply that to installation 1, and you set MQM to associate the queue managers back to installation 1. Now they're running 7.1.0.2. And you can keep back and forth like this, and you could also do this on 3 installations, 4 installations, whatever, up to the maximum of 128. And we expect this staging of maintenance, along with the upgrade options we just looked at, to be where customers are really going to take advantage of multiverse. As we saw in the previous slides, Since the product is already installed with the side-by-side and multi-stage, you're eliminating the whole downtime associated with the install that you have with the single stage, and you are potentially only down as long as it takes you to stop the queue manager, run set MQM, and restart. Slide 31, please. Maintenance and command levels. So this slide demonstrates what you can and can't do regarding command levels. Keep in mind, levels we've used in this migration section are fictional, not meant to represent, you know, actual command levels. As you can see, you can go from 7100 to 7101 to 7102 and back to 7100 because you can always take off a fixed pack as the command level has not changed. The second example works as well, because we have not introduced new function with the new -e option on STRMQM, so the command level for the queue manager has not changed. If we had enabled this, then we could not go back without a backup of the queue manager. The last example, going from 7.2 to 7.103, is obviously a problem because we are going back in a release. Version release changes introduce command level changes, and you'll get an error message starting the queue manager, or stating the queue manager has already been started on a newer release if you do that. The next slide, please. And now we're back at our agenda again, and just to summarize this migration section, remember that if queue manager's command level changes, you can't revert back without a backup. A command level change occurs with a new version or release, and if you've enabled new queue manager function with a modification level release. We have some upgrade options that should reduce your downtime, your queue managers are offline, and you can stage your maintenance to make your MQ life much easier. And now on to Barry, who will talk about multi-version as related to multi-instance clustering and diagnostics.
Thank you, Rich. So now we're going to discuss how multi-version impacts failover and clustering environments, as well as discussing the enhancements to error logs, FFSTs, and traces in support of the multi-version feature. Let's move on to the next slide, please. Let's talk about failover. For those using the multi-instance feature introduced in 7.0.1, multi-version has little effect. You do need to ensure that the command level on the active and standby nodes match. If you do plan to use multi-instance and multi-version on the same system, you should ensure the levels of installation and names match on both nodes to avoid any possible confusion. For MSCS, the answer is simple. The combination of MSCS and multi-installation is simply not supported. This has to do with registration of resources to MSCS, and it's just not something that has been they've been able to solve. One thing I didn't talk about HA managers like IBM Power HA for AIX, but the rules are pretty much the same as multi-instance. The only consideration you might have there is to ensure that your management scripts access the correct installation environments. Let's move on to page 34, please. Clustering. Not really a concern here either. We've already been supporting clustering environments with queue managers at different command levels, and as Rich already talked about, prior to version 7.1, command levels automatically set for you. So version 6MQ and version 7.0MQ could exist in the same cluster. The recommendation of best practice for clusters still applies. Your full repository should always be at the highest command level. Move on to page 35, please. As for diagnostics, we'll primarily focus on enhancements in support for multi-version. There is a full webcast on MQ diagnostics, and we include a link at the end. Let's start with error logs. As with any distributed MQ environment, multi-version or not, we use three error log files using the names listed here. The AMQ ERR01 file will always contain the most recent messages. These files will exist in the errors directory for each queue manager, as well as the top-level errors directory. We've shown the top-level errors directory here for Unix and Linux environments as var MQM errors. For Windows, it's in your default data path / errors. Page 36, please. Note that these high-level error files are shared by all queue managers and all installations within a system. To help determine which installation is responsible for the reported message, installation and VRMF level have been added to the message header. as you can see in the sample here. You can also see one of the new messages associated with multi-installation, which where someone attempted to run the setmqinst command without root authority. As we talked about in the first presentation, this command requires root authority to run or change the installation information. Let's move on to page 37, please. So FFST files contain detailed debugging information are created whenever MQ encounters unexpected conditions. The FFST files, or FDCs, as we normally refer to them, feature the process ID as part of the name. Like the error logs, FDC files exist in the top-level error directory, which will contain these files for all installations on the system. Page 38, please. So because they share the same directory, we include the installation path and installation name as part of the FDC file, which you can see in this abbreviated sample of the header. Okay, let's move on to page 39, please. I do want to talk about the fact that we do have an undocumented tool shipped with a product called FFST Summary. Running the errors directory, you'll be presented with a chronological summary of all the FDC files. Because these files may be for different installations, we've added the installation identifier as part of the output. Note in this sample that there is a blank for the third FDC. That is a representation of a 7-0 installation. Let's move on to page 40, please. Tracing. MQ processes can write detailed information about their activity to files. The naming of these files is along the lines of FDC files in which the process ID is included part of the name. On Unix and Linux, the trace files need to be formatted using the dsbmq trace command. There is a flag that you can add to dsbmq trace minus s, which will give you just the summary of the trace files. Trace files exist in a fixed location at the var mqm trace on Unix and Linux, and in the trace directory under the default data path on Windows. Going on to page 41. So prior to 7.1, there was only one trace status. If you enable tracing for all MQ processes or enabled early tracing, you would receive output from all active MQ processes. In 7.1, each installation has its own trace status. What this means is that all or early tracing will only produce trace files for processes associated with an installation where the start or end trace command was initiated. As Justin said earlier, applications can connect to multiple queue managers in different installations simultaneously. Because of this, you can trace each installation or enable traces in multiple installations. Also note that you can check the status of the trace with the minus S flag on the strmq trace command. So page 42. Here's a sample of the new trace header, and because of the fact that all installations share the same trace directory like we do error directory, the detail of the installation path and name are included so you can easily associate trace files with specific installations. Let's go on to page 43, please. So today we've discussed environmental considerations. We pointed out that when building your applications, you must ensure the use of the full path for your specific MQ installation. We've discussed the need to use the setmqenv command, or you have the option of using the new WMQ7.1 profile utility. In application development, we cover the application design considerations when working in a coexisting environment and how that could have your and how you could have your applications communicate with both 7.0 and 7.1 queue managers simultaneously. Regarding migration, we discussed versioning and discussed the importance of the command level. We covered how migration to a higher command level negates the possibility of returning the queue manager to an earlier command level, at least without a backup of the queue manager. We discussed the three upgrade maintenance scenarios, along with the benefits and drawbacks of each. Lastly, we discussed multi-version implications and how, with the exception of MFCS, there is very little impact. We also touched on diagnostic enhancements to ensure messages, FFST, and trace files can be correctly associated with a specific installation. Moving on to 445, please. Now, we have several links to share with you here. The first is the 7.1 Info Center. We've included a link to the system requirements. The next link is for the first half of this two-part presentation. Next is the migration path. Now, this was added as a result of a question received during the first session concerning migration of 32-bit queue managers to 64-bit. You'll find the details here, but the short answer is this. You can only migrate a 32-bit queue manager, 6.0, to a 64-bit queue manager using 7.0.1. 7.1MQ will not perform this migration or allow the migration to a 5.3 queue manager. And we've included a link to migration instructions. On to 4045, please. Here we start with the link on 7.0.1 to 7.1 changes, including this feature. We follow that with a link to staging maintenance, as Rich mentioned, as well as a link to applying and removing maintenance. This next link is, again, the result of a question from the first session, which provides MQ support position on virtualization. And lastly, I briefly touched on prompt termination, pointing out specifics for multi-version, but here is a link to a full webcast on the subject. And lastly, for those of you attending IMPACT and wanting more on this subject, Jason Edmonds from the Hersey Lab will be providing a presentation on this subject at that event. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Joseph.
Thank you, Barry, Justin, and Rich for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Our first question is from Ping Meng. Your line is open.
Yes. I have a question about during the migration, if we have multi-version installed with earlier version 7.0.1.6 and also 7.1 installed, and we want to do the multi-stage migration, and if during the migration for a queue manager, for some reason it failed, is it possible to roll back to the previous version 7.0.1.6?
Yeah, once you try and start that queue manager, that's when the command level changes. So you would need to take a backup beforehand so you could restore that. So you want to, there's a section in the info center that talks about backing up your queue managers and restoring your queue managers, and that's what you'd want to follow before doing that.
Another thing is, if we have this situation, we have multi-version installed, and but I think from last week's session said we cannot use the same queue manager name in two versions. So, for example, we use queue manager 1 in earlier version 7.0.1.6, and we use queue manager 2 in the new 7.1 version, and we just backup like or create all the objects that existing in 7.0.1.6 and just put it in 7.1, and for the client application, we just ask them to simply point to the new version. Is that okay?
You can do that, but you're essentially creating a new queue manager there and using it in 7.1. And what might be more convenient for you is to, under the 7.1 installation, is to create a queue manager and just do some testing against it. It's not going to be the one that you plan on really migrating over. And then you migrate over with setMQM the 7.1.0.6 queue manager, the queue manager 1 you mentioned, and you migrate that over to the 7.1 installation. I mean, there's nothing stopping you from recreating new queue managers under your 7.1 installation and changing everything to point to them, but that does make things, less convenient for you. So I think the more attractive option would be to just migrate your 7.1 queue manager or 7.0.1 queue manager over to the 7.1 queue manager with setMQM.
Right, that's the standard. Just afraid if there's anything happened during the migration.
Right, but that, hopefully that's what that verification stage will help for you, that you in your verification stage that you've, done some testing and you're confident that the 7.1 install is sound. And, you could always take a backup of your 7.1.0.6 before you do the migration.
Okay. Thank you.
7.0.1.6, sorry.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Feroz Koda. Your line is open.
Yes, hi. I have two questions. With the prior versions, we used to have the common tokens that's normally used in MQ definitions. As an example, like MQ install path, MQ data path, things like that. So now with this new variable, MQ installation path, how does that affect the definitions that's already hard-coded with the plus sign MQ underscore install underscore path plus sign token? Would that be useful, or I have to set that environment variable again in my profile? And the second question is, while I was uninstalling 7.1, although the RPM command had an option to uninstall the Java runtime environment, that Java runtime environment was still lying in the install directory. And please note that I'm installing on a non-default location. So I was just trying to find out if this was done on purpose or this is something that I need to clean up. If I want to remove it, I can just go ahead and manually clean up. Thank you.
Can you elaborate quickly, where were you using the plus sign syntax?
Well, in the MQ definitions token, there's an option for like MQ install path where it would normally use default to the default MQ installation location pre 7.1 situation here. So instead of like user MQM, now I'm calling it like user MQM and new directory.
Right.
So the obviously like MQ install path usually defaulted to the standard default location, so it was okay. So with 7.1, I can obviously set that environment variable, make that equivalent to MQ installation path, so at least the environment variable is set. But I was just trying to find out if that token would still be usable in the definitions, because remember, when I use the definitions, I don't really create anything new. I just migrate the queue manager over to 7.1.
I guess I'm not entirely sure the variable that you mentioned, the MQ install path, is that a variable that you were creating?
No, these are common tokens. I mean, in the MQ manual for version 7, there's a section called common tokens, where all these tokens are identified in terms of like MQ install path, MQ data path, QM name, MQ service name. These are standard tokens that we use replacing the physical directory name. So we would derive that directory name when the queues are created or when the services are being created.
I hate to say I don't think I'm quite getting the question. Would you be willing to email us? Because we'd certainly like to discuss it a bit more. I think the answer is that it will work. There should be nothing that pre-worked at the previous release that we would regress. So it should work with the new path. However, I really want to make sure I understand your question better. Can you email us and we'll go back and forth and discuss that?
Not at all.
Okay, thanks. I really want to make sure I get it right, and I'm not sure I can quite do that right now, so thank you.
And for the second question, you said that you tried a 7.1 uninstall of the RPMs, of all the RPMs on Linux, and you found that the JRE remained after you uninstalled it?
That was the observation.
I did some uninstalls. I mean, it was, I don't know, maybe a month or so ago. And when I went through, I had to, manually pick which RPMs to remove, but it did remove everything. I will, when you send the first email to us, I can go and try that again and see if it left anything. But I wouldn't expect it to leave the RPM around.
Yeah, generally, if you've selected to uninstall all the RPMs, we would expect that they would all go and not leave any behind.
Okay. Yeah, I'll send an email on this as well. Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
Our next question is from Jim Haley. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. We're currently running 7.0.1.2 for queue managers, and I was wondering if your recommendation would be going to 7.0.1.6 and then to 7.1 in a two-step migration process, or just go directly from 7.0.1.2 to 7.1.
Well, which one seems more attractive to you? Do you like the single stage idea, or do you like the idea to eventually being the kind of like the side by side or the multi stage where you can kind of do your fixed packs in a more convenient manner?
Well, typically, if we're doing a company wide migration of several thousand servers, we probably want to simplify the process. But certainly during testing, we'd probably try the two-step process, see how that works.
But I think what it comes down to is the time that you'll be spending. If you do the two-step process, you're going to have the downtime, obviously, to go to, say, 7016 or 7017, and then you'll have the option of this more perhaps convenient, careful migration across. But, of course, it is two different steps. So you might really find in that case that it'll just be easier to do one single stage upgrade from 7012 straight to 7.1 rather than one single stage upgrade from 7012 to 7016 or 7,
right.
And then a side-by-side or a multi-stage.
And then once you're at that 7.1 level, then you could implement, you know, in the future, those side-by-side or multi-stage options.
Yeah, for future fixed packs and releases.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
And our next question is from Tom Kane. Your line is open.
Hello. I was looking at pages 15 and 16, worrying about my applications a little bit more than doing the actual upgrading. If they're currently configured, when I look at them with Chatter, with the OptumQM lib 64, as well as having their library path enabled, and shared library enabled, you'd probably recommend so that we could have a 7.10 and a 7.101 installed at the same place. Recommend that they use the setmqenv in their application environment in order to point back and forth between the different versions.
That would probably be the thing to do, right? So run setmqenv with the minus L or the minus K, and to point to say the 7.1 lib64 directory, and then your application should be able to run against that. In some ways, the thing that will make things a little bit simpler for you in terms of managing your environment for your apps is when you get to the point where you're able to remove 7.0 entirely, you can either make 7.1 a primary installation or install 7.1 in that default location. And that would kind of make your apps with their existing RPath work. And probably the best future solution is to have an RPath compiled in the next time that you release your application that points to the 7.1 directories. And one thing, too, I didn't really talk about this, but I was thinking what I would do if I had applications and I wanted to make sure that they worked. It strikes me that I might actually compile in an RPath, which maybe points to a particular directory, not the directory where I plan to install MQ, but I might actually set up some symbolic links. So I might point RPath to directory A, and A is a symbolic link pointing to the MQ installation that I want, you know, giving me a level of indirection. So that might be an option as well going forward.
And that would remove the requirement to update the application's environment if they happen to overlay their environment with some other change or something.
Right, exactly. If the application has, you know, the default OptumQM lib64, then, you know, at the moment, all I can think of would be that LD library path or SH lib path would override it. But if you didn't have MQ7.0 and you had no MQ in that location, you could actually make OptumQM lib64 or OptumQM lib be symlinks to whatever installation you wish. So symlinks can certainly fix up a lot of potential problems if you wish them to.
Cool. Thank you.
Sure.
We have no further questions over the phone.
Thank you, Jackie. So at this time, we will conclude the presentation.